Brian, Rock 102. It's time for news brought to you by Express Kitchen. Your kitchen faster, better, and for less at expresskitchen.net. Here's local radio icon and first responder Steve Nagel.
Benvenidos, Quarantinos.
Muchos gracias, primer respondedor.
Sí, señor.
Police confiscated an AK-47 assault rifle during a drug and firearms investigation that left three men behind bars on Wednesday. Springfield narcotics detectives raided an apartment on Allen Street at about 1 a.m. after receiving a search warrant. When they entered the home, officers secured five people. A sixth man, Vladimir Rodriguez, ran from the apartment and was apprehended after a brief foot chase. During the search of the apartment, detectives found 12 bags of crack cocaine, the AK-47 with a 30-round magazine, and 18 rounds of ammunition. Shaquan Morales and Daquan Ortiz of Allen Street were arrested and charged with possession of a firearm with a license to carry, possession of high-capacity feeding device, like one of those electric things that your dog goes up to and pushes the button and the water
yeah,
and food
it's
comes
the same
out.
Thing. No, I don't think it's that.
And all kinds of other stuff. The three other people were not involved in the crimes and were released. And that ain't got nothing to do with it. I just came over here for some crack cocaine, okay?
And a feeding device.
And a feeding device.
For my baby.
A crack cocaine feeder.
It was like a crack cocaine feeding device that looked like a Pez dispenser.
Yeah. Oh. I wasn't bothering nobody.
Yeah, but who's the head on the Pez dispenser? Daffy Duck or...
Well, who's our most famous crackhead we've ever had? Former Washington Mayor Marion Barry?
I was just going to get out of my head. I was just going to say Marion Barry.
That would have been a good one.
Be him.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Wow.
The Marion Barry Pez dispenser. Here you go. Crack.
Thank you, Marion Barry.
Yeah, but the problem is if you you lift the head too high, that spring-loaded thing just pops all the cocaine all over the place.
Well, you can't be too rambunctious with it.
We were talking about the restaurants last hour. Somebody had suggested, let me just go back to this. How come no restaurants have used the cone of silence from Get Smart to combat COVID at a table inside of a restaurant?
It's a good question.
I don't remember what that was.
That was the...
It was like a plastic cone that went over like the head of Max and the chief when they needed to speak, in private.
In a restaurant?
Anywhere. They could get it anywhere.
It would go over.
Yeah, there were like little bubbles that would come down upon the two people that were talking to each other.
A single bubble per person or a bubble that encompassed both of them?
A single bubble per person.
So, for example, let's say Max and 99 had something to say. And they didn't want the chief to hear it. The cone of silence would make it impossible, and it would go over both to make sure that there was, privacy. I'm surprised we haven't had that kind of technology, or the phone shoe.
Well, the phone shoe would be in the past already.
The shoe phone. Well, yes, but it would be nice to make calls and play games with your shoes.
I'd still like to take my a little Candy Crush action. Just pick off your shoe.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm looking at a YouTube video right now to try to get the
cone
idea
of silence.
Of this cone of silence. I don't remember it.
Did you watch the show regularly?
Yeah. Pretty regularly.
Yeah.
But he missed it by that much.
Yeah, I did. How'd you know that, Steve?
There was a portable one, too, if I'm not mistaken. Like a portable cone of silence.
Yeah, I believe there was.
But it wasn't nearly as effective.
Oh, I see. All right. Well, it appears to involve an awful lot of plumbing.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. But, these are spies. They had that kind of technology back in 1964.
Oh, I'm sure we still have it now. But we can't be putting it into restaurants just so two people can sit across from each other and have a salad.
Well, how are you supposed to not get COVID eating that Cobb salad?
Eat it at home.
Springfield Police Academy began on Monday with 36 recruits, ending a one-week delay prompted by caution over the coronavirus after seven members had elevated temperatures. The academy was initially scheduled to begin October 5th. It takes place at the Paul J. Fenton Safety Annex on East Street. Everyone at the building was tested for COVID, and all tests, both recruits and officers, came back negative, according to Ryan Walsh. The academy has 34 recruits for the Springfield Police Department and two for Springfield College. It lasts approximately 6 months, with the graduation expected to occur in March.
Steve Guttenberg involved?
No, I don't think it's that kind of police academy. There's no Tackleberry. Well,
that's a good one.
There might be a guy who's like Tackleberry who likes to play with guns all the time, but...
Oh, yeah. Well, that's your firearms instructor.
But wouldn't...
Welcome, recruits!
This is what I got to find out. If the temperatures were taken, like, before they started, or was it the temperature? Like, if you do workouts and you're, like, running around and you're doing
it's taken first thing in the morning.
Because I would imagine the academy is like a... almost like a boot camp type of situation, right?
Yeah, but even heavy duty working out, that's going to increase your heart rate. It shouldn't necessarily increase your body temperature. I don't think. That would depend on the outside temperature. Sure, if you're running in hot weather, that's going to increase your body temperature.
Commissioner Claprud said on Tuesday afternoon, she was pleased the academy is moving forward as it needed to fill vacancies caused by attrition, including retirements. For a variety of reasons, not many officers are working until they are 65 years old anymore. Each year we have a void of 30 or so experienced officers who we need to replace due to retirements, and each academy class is essential in filling those positions so we can continue to provide the essential services to each neighborhood in our city.
Yeah, who the hell would want to keep that job until 65 now?
Well, I mean, because of the climate of the police...
combination of all kinds of things. Between that and COVID and... Also, you know, if you're still a patrolman, let's say, at 65, you're still doing a lot of grunt work, which can be a lot harder to do at 65. Conversely, if you're a guy who went up through the ranks, every time you get a new rank, you go back to the midnight shift, and that gets a little tiring as well. So it's not a job for old men anymore.
Oh, so it's based on seniority per job?
What do you mean?
You become a sergeant, and now you're at the bottom of the list?
Exactly.
So you get
your seniority drops every time you're promoted.
Well, why would you want a promotion then?
More money. More pension. And eventually, the guys above you are going to move on. You become a sergeant.
Yeah.
Then, after a certain period of time, you can test for lieutenant. There are less of each as you go higher. There are less lieutenants than there are sergeants. There are less captains than there are lieutenants. There are less deputy chiefs as there are captains.
It's like a constantly revolving situation. So let's say you have like five lieutenants. At some point, one of the lieutenants is going to retire. Then you bump up one spot, kind of like the Billboard magazine top 40.
Yeah,
you know?
Only you bump up one spot to the bottom.
Right, like this week, Alan O'Day's Undercover Angel drops from the top spot to number 10, and your big hit goes up two spots.
They should have a Casey Kasem-like dispatcher telling that information over the radio.
Can't believe I had to do a long distance dedication for a goddamn dog.
Ryan Walsh could do that?
Yeah, Ryan Walsh could do that.
Ryan Walsh is no Casey Kasem.
Hey, listen.
he can figure it out. He's young. He's adaptable.
Coming up, the latest on stuff nobody will tell me. And congratulations to our latest officer who got recruited, who got promoted to sergeant.
And now, a long-distance extradition.
From Nathan Bills. This one's going out to Nathan Bills.
It's called Beat It by Michael Jackson. It's the number one hit. Ta-da! Hey, yo. I got to stop laughing because we're going into like a really sad sick story.
Oh,
already.
Good.
A woman accused of killing a pregnant Texas woman and removing the baby from the victim's womb has been moved from Oklahoma to a Texas jail. The Texas Department of Public Safety says 27-year-old Taylor Parker of Sims, Texas, was booked Wednesday into the Bi-State Detention Center in Texarkana, Texas, without bond. She's been charged with capital murder, murder and kidnapping in the death of 21-year-old Reagan Simmons Hancock, who was found dead on Friday with her baby removed from her body. The baby later died at a southeastern Oklahoma hospital. You gotta have some really, really messed up stuff going on in your head to do something like that.
Yeah, I would think so.
One thing,
very, very little medical knowledge.
It's one thing of like a, you know, heat of passion crime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you stab somebody once and that's it, and then it's over.
But this is
or even 40 times. But when you're actually like performing a procedure with a knife because you have an end goal, that's a different level of demented.
A stunning tale of inappropriate behavior between a politician and a television anchor, death threats and nude photos culminated in a joint police and FBI investigation, the arrest of a journalist, and the resignation of the mayor of Anchorage. Democrat Ethan Berkowitz resigned Tuesday night, days after he vehemently denied allegations by Your Alaska Link anchor Maria Athens that he had posted nude photos of himself on an underage website. The FBI says it found no immediate evidence to support a violation of federal law. Athens, meanwhile, is accused of attacking her station manager and has been charged with assault, criminal mischief, and disorderly conduct. The FBI is also investigating allegations she left a threatening voicemail on the mayor's phone. This story just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah, you know, I heard the whole story about the mayor and the nasty pictures. I just read the other day that the woman was fired for physically attacking her boss at the TV station.
Who she was having an affair with.
The TV boss?
Yeah, she was. Yeah. That's what I'm saying, how crazy this thing is. She was also having an affair with the boss of the TV station.
And the mayor.
And the mayor.
Sounds like she might be a little bit of a whore.
Well, I mean, who's to judge,
sounds
really?
Sounds like she might be a little bit of a wackadoo, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, that too, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, she might not be around for long.
You just got to watch the ones that you know, let's say you cheat on your wife and you go out with somebody, you got to watch for the ones that won't leave your driveway at 2 a.m.
Mhm.
Or who won't boil the family bunny in a pot of water.
Like the Quagmire. When he's walking out of the bathroom and the lady goes, Glenn, I have a question. What do you do for a living? I have a question for you, too. Why are you still here? It's true.
Yes. Oh, no. It's very, very true. There's no doubt about that, Steve.
There's a 35-year-old man named James Mallett of Kingswood, England. And back in November, he was drunk and taking an Uber to a club. And then he passed gas.
Oh, boy.
The driver told him to get out, and when he did, James started punching the driver. The driver fought back and broke his finger. James was in court this week and wound up pleading guilty to assault. He got a 6-month suspended sentence, community service, and a small fine.
Does flatulence and violence affect your Uber rating?
I don't know. Have you ever wanted to punch somebody for doing that?
For farting?
Yeah.
No.
Really?
Well, I mean, a stranger who's in your car, you're an Uber driver, you got a stranger in the car, and he rips one out, and who knows? I mean, he might have been drunk, he might have been, hey, check this out.
Well, I mean, the thing is...
Pull my finger, Uber dude.
It's a biological function. I mean, it's not necessarily an act of aggression, unless he made like a big deal about it and did a whole wind-up.
Hey, we don't know the method of delivery.
I mean, it's not, if he had said, hey, pull my finger, that's an act, that's an old-fashioned gag. But if he just snuck one out, then you can't blame a guy for that. Really?
As long as he says, excuse me.
A new survey asked how they're going to celebrate Halloween this year. More than two-thirds of people say they are planning on celebrating, and here's what they're going to do. The number one thing, watch a movie at home.
Wow.
A Halloween-based movie, but still. Decorate the house.
Wow.
Carve a pumpkin.
Wow.
Now that's fun.
Hand out candy if your town allows it.
Wow.
Wear a costume.
Yeah, I'm not wearing any costumes.
Go to a party. I'm not going to a party.
That's doing the same thing I do every year. Turning off all the lights and go into the room furthest from the front door.
Yeah, I'm also addressing people that are not you. I knew what you were going to do.
Oh, I'm also going to have my Ring camera phone, my Ring camera, rather, with the audio turned up. So if anybody is foolish enough to come up to my front door, despite its darkness, I will be able to yell at them.
Yeah. I think the difficulty is, this year, Halloween is on Saturday.
Ah.
And so that's, you know, that kind of messes everybody up because, you know, you do want to have, it's the weekend. You know, if you're going to have a socially distanced Halloween party, that's the night to do it.
I'm just going to set up a little little thing in my backyard and little stations where the kids can go around and pick up the candy. Just my two kids. That's it.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah. And pretend like they're knocking on doors.
Oh, that's very clever.
And then I'll give them hand out free beers and we'll have a good time.
There you go.
Watch that Halloween movie.
It's like last year.
And then a lot of people say their they believe their house is haunted. Do you think your house is haunted?
No. No. I don't believe a lot of people think their house is haunted.
What are you talking about? You've never had anything happen in your house that was unexplainable?
Well, there's lots of unexplained phenomena in this house.
There have been some spirits in this place, but unwanted too, even on occasion. Mm-hmm. But no, I would not call it haunted.
Yeah, a ghost would get to your house and go, somebody already hit this bitch. Jesus, let's go to the next door. We have a guest, and that's the news on Rock 102. Oh, yeah.
Hi, Massachusetts. Everybody knows there are things in life that make total sense. Like
it's 8:49 with Bax and O'Brien at Rock 102.
Beautiful day today. Sunshine, high of 75. It is 47 right now in downtown Springfield.
It's actually been a while since we had comedian Steve Byrne on the phone with us, and it's good to have him back. Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
Good. Thank you guys so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I think the last time we talked to you, you had just completed the documentary about the amazing Jonathan. And I wound up seeing it on YouTube, and I thought it was terrific.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Yeah, the good news is Jonathan's still with us. He's still kicking around, and the great thing I think about putting it on YouTube is obviously the accessibility. It's free. You can see it now. Anybody, just type in Always Amazing. But Jonathan reads all the comments, and the film has just been really, really positively received, and you see all these people bringing up all these anecdotes and stories that Jonathan does not remember that that are special to him. So he's reading all these things and seeing this one time he dropped his Corvette off at a auto mechanic shop and ended up leaving it there for 6 months because he never paid and then forgot he had left the Corvette there because he's got so many cars and came back and paid for it. So I don't know how you forget you have a Corvette, but I think being a drug addict helps part of that.
Yeah, sure. Also, if you have a number of Corvettes, perhaps, maybe that's how you forget, too.
That's right.
So the new movie, the opening act, comes out, I believe, tomorrow? Is that right?
Yeah, it comes out tomorrow. I can't believe it's finally here.
I saw the trailer this morning. First of all, the cast you got for this movie is fantastic.
Yeah, look, you go to a comedy club, you see an MC feature and a headliner. So we have Jimmy O. Yang from Silicon Valley playing the MC, Alex Moffer from SNL playing the feature, Cedric the Entertainer playing the headliner. Then you got Whitney Cummings, Eliza Schlesinger, Kathleen Madigan, Angela Johnson, Bill Burr, Tom Segura, Neil Brennan, Roy Wood Jr., Ken Jeong, Russell Peters, and so many more I haven't even named. So I look at that cast on the poster and I'm like, no wonder I'm not in my own damn film. I mean, look at this cast. It's unbelievable.
I just watched the trailer myself a few minutes ago. It said from the producers Vince Vaughn and Peter Billingsley. Why is that name familiar?
He played Ralphie in The Christmas Story.
That's right. Ralphie from A Christmas Story. And he's one of those child actors that has survived Hollywood, never developed a cocaine problem. But Vince has always described him as when he first moved to Hollywood, Peter was one of the first guys he met, and they became roommates at the age of 18. And Vince always described Peter the first time you meet him, you think, oh, he's so sweet. He's such a nice guy. He's got this kind of small demeanor. And then after hanging out with him one day, he's like the little baby from Roger Rabbit in a diaper, just smoking on a stogie, pounding whiskey. That's how Vince described him.
This comedian Steve Byrne on the phone. So the premise of the movie, the opening act, is about a young kid wants to be a stand-up comic, gets a real opportunity, and just eats a big giant bag of garbage right there on stage, which really is almost the story of almost every stand-up comic at some point in their career.
Sure, yeah. I wanted to, you know, when I sat down to write this thing, I thought, I want to write the best film I've ever seen about stand-up comedy. Because as much as, for example, I love The Big Sick, it's just not solely about stand-up, right? It's a great film about an unconventional relationship. And I wanted to write a film about the beginning. Every comic has had one last job. So what was that last job you had before you took the leap and went all in on stand-up? And so this is a film about a kid's first time ever going on the road at a professional comedy club and experiencing all the firsts, from the light to hecklers to bachelorette parties to even doing, yes, morning radio for the first time. And every comic knows that again, is another muscle you got to work on and understand how to do it. And thank God for us, our lead character, Will, he fails miserably every step of the way, and it's a lot of fun. And the badge of honor for me is having people like Bill Burr or Neil Brennan, really brutally honest guys, call me after they saw not only their film but their performance, and they said the same three things over and over again. I loved it. It was so authentic. And you re-triggered all these horrible memories from early in my career. I can't wait to see my therapist again, you bastard. So that's been really nice to hear.
So if it's coming out this week, and obviously it was made a little while ago, how far into, was this all pre-COVID or was some of this during it?
All pre-COVID. We filmed it late 2018, edited the film over 2019. We were going to film festivals. We had a premiere set, and then, you know, everything went to hell in a handbasket. So now we're streaming VOD, and I can wear my tuxedo in my living room as I pop Orville Redenbacher microwave popcorn with my wife. That's where I'm at. So I'm really excited about it. And look, the thing I think is everybody's been to a comedy club, but you've never been on the road, and that's what this film's about.
But do you feel, you say you're comfortable with it? I mean, obviously there's got to be a part of you that kicks yourself to say, I can't believe of all times, you know, that I've got this movie coming out. We're in this worldwide pandemic. Is it something we should hold on to and wait until it's over, or just go ahead and release it on demand?
There was certainly that debate, but you know what? I think that there's been so few comedies that have come out over the last few months, and I think we all could use a laugh. I think especially these dark days, we could all use some levity in our lives, and we just thought maybe this is going to be a good time to release it, because there's so few movies being released, and then there's fewer comedies over the last 6 months, so
right.
I'm pretty excited about our chances here.
So what was your last full-time job?
My last full-time job was, I was a waiter at a Greek restaurant called the Aegean on the Upper West Side of New York City. It was 73rd in Columbus, I believe. And I remember the last day I was there, I quit my job and I went on the road, and I made $50 that weekend. So I was like, maybe this isn't a good move.
was it as an opener or middle, or what was the first gig?
I was definitely the opening act, and I thought like an idiot I was going to make real money. And I got an opening weekend. I thought, I'm going to quit this job. I'm going to make money as a stand-up comedian. And I'll never forget, I got the check at the end of the weekend. I told the manager, I go, this means more to me than any amount of money. And then I got to my car, opened it, and I was like, son of a... And I started swearing I wanted to go back in and beat the hell out of the guy. I was like, 50 bucks, four shows?
You know, I think what a lot of people don't understand is it's not just about the commitment to do it full-time, but, you know, just to get into clubs, to get, you know, time on the stage. Never mind traveling or going on the road, but, you know, there's this political pecking order that comics have to go through as like a rite of passage, that it's very complicated and sometimes impossible to get into certain clubs simply because somebody there doesn't like you.
Exactly, yeah. Look, I've been doing this 23 years. I had my own television show. I just wrote and directed a film about stand-up. There are still two clubs in this country that will not work me for some reason, and I've never been there. I just don't know why I can't get booked there. So you're right, it just is what it is. And again, the film takes you through all those things, and it really explains. There's a lot of inside baseball here, and I think people are going to be educated on all the ins and outs of professional stand-up comics.
Is there there's a piece there in the trailer I just saw a minute ago of Cedric the Entertainer watching the opening act while he's on stage? Is there a thing in the comedy world where they're actually rooting for each other, or is it a constant competition against one another?
No, I think this job is so difficult in its own right. Most comics are very supportive of one another. You know, the great thing about, like, the Comedy Store is all the comics, you sit in the green room, you all commiserate, you BS, you catch up, and then the minute one of us leaves, that's when the backstabbing starts. But for the most part, we're all pretty good with each other in front of our faces.
Yeah, but you have to admit, there have been some times when a guy just ate it on stage and you just, you know, giggled with glee because it happened to that guy.
Yeah, that's, we enjoy that. Yeah, that's the best. I bombed so bad in front of Eddie Murphy at the Comedy Store. It was his first time back at the Comedy Store in years. I bombed so bad, I was right there, he was in the back of the room, I got off stage, he walked past me in the hallway, didn't even acknowledge me, and the manager told me ever since that night he's not been back since, so I think it's my fault that he didn't come back to this store.
The name of the movie is The Opening Act. It opens tomorrow. All the video on demand sites, Apple, iTunes, Amazon, and probably a few others too. Steve, it's great to talk to you. Best of luck with the film.
I love you guys. Thanks so much for being supportive and having me on.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Steve.
Comedian Steve Byrne with Bax and O'Brien at Rock 102.
GG Inks, screen printing and embroidery. They print the shirt on your back. Heck, they make the Rock 102 shirts that we wear and give out to you at a